Elections are over, democracy works, although it's developed some troublesome quirks. If you won or lost, here's an aide memoir. You still have friends at WPR. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross. This week, Kevin Henderson talks from Norway on the group he's part of, the Nordic Fiddlers Block, playing Saturday night in West Denmark, just a bit west of Luck, Wisconsin, along Little Butternut Lake. Always a good time. And we'll sample their amazing talent. Jim Oliver is here to take inventory of what's on stage in West Wisconsin and also shares some dialogue with Jim Gould, artist and author living in Hudson. His new book, 11 Miles to Oshkosh, is on shelves and on Spectrum West. Saturday's a big night for the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, presenting their second concert of the season in the Jamf Theater of the Pablo Center. Music director Frank Watkins fills in the blanks, and we'll sample the concert repertoire. And to get this show on the road, this. For a long time, it's been said, music is good for the soul. It's now being demonstrated that music is also good for the memory, something that's demonstrated each time the Stand in the Light Memory Choir rehearses and performs, each time members listen to rehearsal recordings on their own. One solid ambassador for the concept, an influential, memorable vocalist in her own right, is the founder and director of the choir, Kathy Wrights. They have a performance coming up, so we got together for a chat. For those who are new to the conversation, bring them up to speed on the history of the Stand in the Light Choir.
The Stand in the Light Memory Choir started in the fall of 2016, and it's made for people who have early to mid stages of dementia and a care partner. Your personal care partner, it can be just a singing partner, it can be your neighbor, your family. Every person in the choir has a partner. And that way, we can take music and we can share it, and you don't have to be afraid of not knowing what page you're on or if you've never done music. Okay. You always have somebody you're working with.
All right. I don't think you are a clinician to the degree that you can make healthcare determinations.
No, I cannot.
So do you in any way work with healthcare professionals to determine a person's eligibility, their stage of memory loss, whether it's right for them, or is this something that families can determine on their own?
Families really determine it on their own. Okay. And if you come and you like it, it's right for you. And if you have a diagnosis, great. If you don't, great. If it makes you happy and makes you feel like you're accomplishing something, you're in.
So bottom line is, no matter what, it is a win-win situation. It's win for them, win for you.
Exactly.
Good for that. Some of the Facebook comments I read, this talks about its vitality. One comment said, fantastic mission, fantastic songs, very patient conductor. There she is. This group has brought joy to my mother and in turn also to myself. It is great to see her enjoying something so much. Another comment, wonderful choir that brings joy to all, purpose, accomplishment, and joy for those with memory loss, embracing the sounds of music. And finally, what a wonderful program, exclamation point. You can see how meaningful the group is for everyone involved, and making beautiful music together is such a testimony to the strength of each individual. Truly inspiring. That has to make Kathy Wrights feel good.
It does make me feel good, but it also makes me think, oh, there's so many more people out there who could benefit from this choir.
Yeah.
Come sing with us.
Of course, you can only be so big, can't
you? Oh, no, we can get as big as we want. Yes.
Oh. So it
and when
be...
it gets too big, then we'll have two choirs.
Oh, well,
so wouldn't that be exciting?
Yeah, well, that's cool. So tell me about, we're going to talk about an upcoming concert. Tell me about past concerts and how those have gone and how rewarding those are for you as the
director. Well, our first concert was in the fall of 2016,
yes.
And we had about 22 people. And it was amazing because we didn't really know what was going to happen when we had the choir in front of an audience. And true to human nature, the choir rose to the occasion, and we had an amazing concert. And every concert, our choir has grown, and our audience has grown. which is even more exciting. We've had guests come in from New York who have written songs about dementia, who have come in and performed with us. Guests, musicians come in and perform with us. Mm-hmm. And this concert, we're having high school students perform some original pieces with us that we received from the Giving Voice Memory Choir in Minneapolis.
Let's just backpedal for just a second. Back to the eligibility part, mm-hmm. the benefits and the clinical side of things. Are you or have you, other than these wonderful comments that we've seen and read on Facebook, are you getting responses from family members and or people who are educated in it? Are you getting responses of it making a difference to people? And maybe not just short-term right after the concert, but maybe long-term.
Absolutely.
Longer term.
I think the best comment that we get, and we get it often, is when family members or friends see their loved one up there singing, their comment is, I saw the old person. She came alive again. And, you know, and that's really what happens. For that moment, and hopefully for some time afterwards, every rehearsal, mm-hmm. something triggers the soul or the mind or whatever we want to call it, to be back in the present. For me, you really can't beat that. I see it every week and we talk about it and you can read about it and I can cite all these different things saying music is good for you and music makes you feel better, music keeps your brain active. But the truth is, every week at rehearsal, I see it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that amazing.
Is it better for the choir to sing things that bring back memories for them, or is it better to learn new things?
We do about 50-50. So we really try to make sure there are some things that where they are going to be very comfortable and very sure of themselves. But then we bring in brand new things, too.
Yeah.
And we teach it a little differently than I might teach my other community choir. We take it in smaller steps. We have rehearsal tapes that they listen to when they're not with me. And so when people say, oh, you can only do songs they know, no, that's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
The mind on dementia can still learn new things. They just learn the pattern differently.
Okay, you mentioned the rehearsal tapes because that was something I was going to bring up. Wondering if choir members are encouraged to work on the material when they're not with you, either alone or with loved ones, family members.
We send the rehearsal CDs home. I guess they're CDs. They're not really tapes anymore.
Oh, come on. Don't people use cassettes anymore? I have a ton of them.
Of course you do. And we encourage them, please listen to this every day.
Sure.
And the first concert we had, we did not make rehearsal CDs. We were like, well, they really couldn't make a difference. The second semester that we had it, we made rehearsal CDs, mm-hmm. and it was unbelievable, the difference.
Well, good. And they're reminded of the good time that rehearsals
exactly.
are. Kathy Wright's in the studio with us. It's the Stand in the Light Memory Choir. They are performing Thursday, November 15th, 6:30 p.m., Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd. That is in Eau Claire. You'll love it. I read the words, we are here. What is that saying to people? Don't forget us. Don't write us off. What does that all mean?
Well, I think it means exactly what you said, but we chose those words because one of the original songs we're doing is called I Am Here.
Okay.
And then it ends with the phrase, we are here. Sometimes in our society, when people get a diagnosis or maybe when they just are showing some signs of dementia, we put them someplace that they're safe or that, you know, we don't have to worry about them. But the truth is, they're still here and they still feel and they still want to accomplish things and they still want to do things.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that with this concert, we do a little bit of educating in my musical way, saying, look, we're here and we're not going to be just, you know, shushed off to the side.
Sure. And the chances are, if people do, or let's say when they do show up for one of your performances, chances are someone's going to come into their mind who would benefit from this.
That is probably, again, the number one thing I hear from people who don't have members in the choir. I wish my mom or dad could have,
could or have, yeah.
Can I bring, you know, my neighbor lady? And I say, of course. And if they don't like it, that's great. But come, try it.
You've been a singer for many years. You are known for your feisty, spirited performance and approach. And now this has been added to your repertoire. What has this experience added to Kathy, the human being?
Compassion.
Yeah. It's added a lot, I'm
going to say. It's unbelievable. Empathy, but also really look at people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give that old, you have a diagnosis, therefore, this is what is going to happen. No. There's a saying I read somewhere that said, if you know one person with dementia, all you know is one person with dementia. Because every person is different. There's so many types of dementia. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've learned to be, like I said, much more compassionate and have empathy. But also the reward I get back, that when you don't have those things, you have completely lost out on an amazing feeling of getting back.
How about you, the performer? Because you feel more whole as a person, does it affect your performance?
I think so, yes. I think because yes, I give to this choir, but what I get back is way more.
That's a good way of saying it. Now, the performance Thursday the 15th is called Three More Words, A Joyful Evening. Choir members with memory loss, their care partners and volunteers share their love of music and perform for family, friends, and community. I'm sure you want to give a shout-out to Nancy Wendt, who accompanies
absolutely
the choir. And this performance, I see, in addition to the high school kids, and you can expound on that if you'd like, Glenn Campbell songs. He just ended a battle with the same thing.
Right. And we're doing several of his songs, but it's kind of funny because the last song that he wrote called I'm Not Gonna Miss You, I had several members who have dementia requests doing that. And we always try to fill that. Okay. And it's a tough song to sing. If you haven't heard it, it's basically saying, sorry, but I'm not going to miss you. I know you're sad, but I don't know that.
Mm.
But the care partners are like, we don't like this song. We don't want to sing this song. And I'm like,
sure.
Ooh, yeah. Not about you. And to watch, again, my choir members who have a diagnosis sing this song, it's again a way of saying, hey, look, this is what it's going to be. I've accepted it. You have to.
The high school students is an interesting injection into the performance. You know, when you're in high school, you couldn't be further away from this stuff.
That's right.
And for them to have a perspective that takes away all the years between now and then is probably pretty poignant for them.
Well, I do hope that happens. And I actually did that for two reasons. One is because, again, I think awareness is key. I think everyone can say, oh, yeah, remember great grandma?
Uh-huh.
She must have had dementia. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, for my choir members to see these young people come and participate with them,
mm-hmm.
that also is affirmation that someone cares.
Sure. Free admission, donations accepted.
Absolutely.
Yes. Happily.
Happily.
Thankfully.
Thankfully.
And there's a reception that's going to follow.
Yes, and we always have little snacks afterwards so you can talk to choir members and to each other. And we've had some wonderful churches who have donated all the food and stuff. And there'll be like coffee and punch or something like that.
Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The Stand in the Light Memory Choir. Witness it for yourself next Thursday, the 15th, 6:30 p.m. at Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Eau Claire. Kathy Wrights also directs the Chippewa Valley Youth Course. There's an old Swedish proverb that says, those who wish to sing will always find a song. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, with Craig Blacklock's photos exploring the St. Croix and Namekagon River, celebrating the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. More at mmam.org. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Support also comes from the Pablo Center at the Confluence. Hanukkah Castle and Mike Block perform music drawing from Celtic, Americana, and classical traditions November 9th in the Jamf Theater. Details at pablocenter.org. Saturday marks the occasion of the second concert for the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, and the way I look at it is, if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it. This concert is wall-to-wall Baroque, featuring some widely recognized works by Johann Sebastian Bach. Frank Watkins is music director of the ensemble, and earlier this week I caught up with him on his cell phone in the midst of a road trip. Tell me what you're doing out and about. What are you on tour doing right now?
So right now I'm on tour with the Women's Concert Chorale from UW-Eau Claire. We are in the Minnesota, Eden Prairie area. So we're just here recruiting for the university, sharing our gifts and our love of music with high school students around the area.
So you're being ambassadors.
We are.
I want to talk about the word Baroque. The definition, I'm going to read it, relating to or denoting a style of European architecture, music, and art of the 17th and 18th centuries that followed mannerism and is characterized by ornate detail. In architecture, the period is exemplified by the Palace of Versailles and by the work of Bernini in Italy. Major composers include Vivaldi, Bach, and Handel. Caravaggio and Rubens are important Baroque artists. Now, Frank, I understand the meaning of mannerism. It involved experimenting with natural form and turning it a bit unnatural or distorted, and detail, both in the visual art world. But does the term Baroque mean some of the same things pertaining to music? Was it a time or a method of experimentation in music as well?
Absolutely. Bach, you know, experimenting with the fugues. I mean, that's the one, just an example of what they meant by experimentation, going through different tonal and key signatures, how he would invert the fugue theme or make it longer or shorter or have it come at different spots in the excerpt. That's just an example of how composers at that time were really trying to make things more ornate and really experimenting with music in general, but really to pattern yourself off of the architecture and the artists of the time as well.
So now, what is it about the Baroque that keeps fascinating musicians and audiences? Is there a certain kind of fascination that's not present otherwise? And secondly, does it challenge an orchestra in special ways?
Yeah, I think, music of any genre has its own characteristics, and I think people have really just grown to love the ornateness, the musicality, the style of the Baroque period. So I think that's fascinated not only composers, but musicians and listeners for generations. Just the sheer beauty of the instruments, use of the harpsichord or the gambas, these instruments that we still play today, sometimes on modern instruments, but the idea of playing those old instruments is just fascinating.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's something that has fascinated not only musicians, but also listeners for centuries.
And it challenges players as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's about finding the right style, how you hold a Baroque bow and how, what the sound you make, how you think about the decay of certain notes or just the precision of a musical line, especially with things such as Bach. How do you really express all those fugal entries and ideas so that overall the music still has a nice arc and ebb and flow to it?
Mm-hmm. You know, I might be a bit oversensitive to it because I talk about these kinds of things weekly, but it appears to me that more and more ensembles are dipping into the Baroque folder more often. Is that is Baroque something that, as a musical director and a conductor, you feel an ensemble needs to play or experience a certain amount of a certain percentage of the time to remain, what, proficient?
I think so. I think, with my education background, I really believe that the best teacher is repertoire. I mean, I think, as performing ensembles, the things we learn the most are from the music we play. So I think that every ensemble, whether it be a professional orchestra or community orchestra, choir, band, they all need to experience the breadth of music that has existed for centuries. So yes, for orchestras, I think it's important for them to have the experience of playing Baroque music.
We're on the phone with Frank Watkins. He's out and about. He's touring with some people. Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra has a concert coming up Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m. in the wonderful Jamp Theater at the Pablo Center in downtown Eau Claire. The concert is entitled Baroque Treasures. Now, Frank, Bach wrote a lot of music in his time. If you read about him, it appears that the bulk of his career was spent living in the Baroque period. Does that also mean that all or most of his music bears those attributes or description?
Yeah, absolutely. Bach's music is, I mean, he's the quintessential composer of the Baroque period. So even his orchestral or chamber music, even to his vocal music or operas, I mean, all of those elements really, those different genres really hone in on Bach's expertise as a Baroque composer, really as a genius when it comes to the style.
Now, this concert Saturday evening features a number of solos and soloists, and not just instrumentalists. You have a vocal guest. Tell us about her and then about the arias from the Passions of St. Matthew and St. John.
Yeah, we're really excited to feature Professor Julie DeBoer from U of Eau Claire, as well as professional bass singer Mr. Joseph Hubbard. They will both be singing two arias from Bach's St. Matthew and St. John's Passion. The arias are just really ornate and beautiful. I think the audience will really enjoy this kind of change of texture and change of timbre, something different from the instrumental portion of the concert.
What else is in the concert catalog? What fills out the bill?
So we have the Bach Orchestral Suite. We'll begin with that in C major, as well as his Brandenburg Concerto for two violas in the gamba. And we also have, like I said before, the four arias, as well as his oboe and violin concerto.
Okay. Do you want to single out some of the soloists so they get their due on the radio?
Sure. For the oboe and violin concerto, we have our concertmaster, Ryan Paquette, and our first chair oboist, Dr. Krista Garvey. For the arias, we have Professor Julie DeBoer and Mr. Joseph Hubbard. And for the Brandenburg Concerto, we feature Ava Tippett and Christy Peterberg.
Now, I've seen an orchestra concert in the Jamp Theater. I attended the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra evening, and it sounded wonderful. This is a new performance era for the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're excited to be in a new facility. We're excited to be to have our new home at the Pablo. We opened our first concert in the RCU, the large auditorium. So this concert will be our first concert in the smaller space.
Frank Watkins, as always, thank you for being with us on WPR.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra. Here's a brief medley of things you'll hear Saturday night. p.m., Jamp Theater, Pablo Center, Eau Claire. Tickets online at pablocenter.org. And at the box office, orchestra details online at echochambermusic.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. If you're looking for good news about the climate, come see an inspiring film called Happening, A Clean Energy Revolution. The free movie will be shown at two locations, the Ellie Phillips Library, Eau Claire Room, Tuesday, November 13th, and on campus at UWEC Davies Center in the Woodland Theater on Sunday, November 18th. Both showings will be at 6:30 p.m. Well, this week, Jim Oliver welcomes an author now living in Hudson along a river, but who wrote a book that takes place in a town on the shores of a big lake on Wisconsin's east side where he was raised. Take it away, big guy.
Thanks, Al. Jim Gould grew up in the Fox Valley city of Neenah in the 1960s and 70s and now lives in Hudson. After retiring from a career in engineering, he has turned to writing fiction and painting. After winning awards with short fiction, he's published his first full-length fictional book, 11 Miles to Oshkosh, a murder mystery set in Neenah. It was released in October by the University of Wisconsin Press. Jim Gould joins us by telephone from his home in Hudson. Well, tell us about this 15-year-old crime fighter, Del Minnow Fenwick.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jim. Minnow Fenwick, the protagonist in the book, is challenged in many ways. He is, for one thing, an 84-pounder, so the smallest sophomore at Shattuck High in Neenah, Wisconsin. But his biggest challenges are family-related in that his father, a deputy sheriff with Winnebago County, has been recently murdered by an unknown killer who's generically known as the Highway 41 killer, who has struck before and now has struck Del's father. To make matters worse, Del's mother suffers from a permanent illness, which we learn more about as we get into the book.
Well, she was she was still in mourning and sat around smoking cigarettes in her pajamas most of the time.
Right.
So, among other things, Del was, you talked about him being a little guy, he was bullied a lot.
That's right. He was a favorite target of the grits and dirt balls that kind of roamed the outskirts of the grounds of Shattuck High and frequently beat up and roughed up for his lunch money and other reasons and struggled just to get into the school in the morning and get home after school.
One of my favorite characters in the book was his grandfather, and he tended to lean on his grandfather, it sounded like, and his grandfather made some, kind of interesting sacrifices, like spending some time in jail because of some of Del's activities.
Exactly. Grandpa Asa is the grandfather, kind of a gruff character, but at the same time, kind of a kid at heart. And there's nothing that pleases him more than to be able to help out his grandson, Del. Asa lives in a dumpy apartment on the edge of town, and Del frequently goes over there and visits him. And I would say Asa is the greatest enabler of Del trying to pursue whatever it is he's trying to pursue, whether it's pursue the killer of his father or the latest prank that they want to pull against Menasha High. Grandpa Asa is there to help him out.
Since this was set in Neenah, and you grew up in Neenah, will any Neenah residents recognize themselves as character in the book?
No. That was something I was careful about, is that the characters are all completely made up. The things that are real are the places that are mentioned in the book, things that pertain to the time frame, the early 70s, are of course, real. And the general scene at Shattuck High, where it's the very first change from an all-white makeup of the classes to now we're getting our first sprinkling of African-American student in the form of Opal Parsons.
Yeah, that was one of the high points as far as I was concerned about Del. On the one hand, he befriended Opal, but then when he asked her to the prom, she'd already made a date with his best friend.
With his best friend, Mark. Yeah. So that was a gut blow for Del. But he's pretty good at recovering from those sort of things.
Yeah. seemed that way. Do you plan to move your stories around the state, assuming there's going to be more stories coming? Will you go elsewhere, or do you plan to stick around Nina for the sites?
For future writing?
Yeah, for future writing, yeah.
What I'm interested in doing, Jim, is writing about Wisconsin and the Midwest, and I like what I've done is I've written a second book that is not yet completely finished, but is in a manuscript form, and that one takes place in northwestern Wisconsin, and I've actually started a third book, and that takes place in eastern Wisconsin. My interest is in writing regional fiction, writing about a specific place, not a made-up place, but a specific place, and I've done that with all three of these books. Obviously, 11 Miles to Oshkosh is the Fox Valley, but the other two I'm working on, very specific and real locations that people can relate to, and at specific points in time also, where there's something going on at each location that makes the time frame noteworthy.
We're talking to Jim Gould, author of 11 Miles to Oshkosh. I gather, then, if you're going to be moving around the state, that we won't hear from Minnow again for a while, at least.
I haven't ruled that out, but my book writing efforts, my fictional novel writing efforts, are identifying brand new protagonists in books number 2 and number 3.
Uh-huh. We also mentioned in the introduction that not only are you a writer, but you're also a painter.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's talk about your visual arts here for a bit. You're showing your work, and you apparently have a project of creating a collection of paintings representing Wisconsin's 72 counties. Talk about that, how you planned that out, and how's it going?
All right. I got the idea of doing that 5 years ago or so. I painted a scene in 2013 in St. Croix County, a scene of an old grain mill in Baldwin, Wisconsin. And then I decided, well, let's keep going. I'll just roam out to the other western Wisconsin counties. I live in Hudson, so I started with all the western counties and did a scene where of Crex Meadows up in Burnett County. I did a scene in Polk County at Interstate Park with a view from the bluffs down at the St. Croix River. Roamed all around. I've got a painting of the Black River that represents Jackson County. And then my mother and father live in eastern Wisconsin, in Neenah, actually. Mm-hmm. And my mom likes to go out in the field with me. And so we've covered some eastern Wisconsin counties, me and my mother together, where we each paint a separate picture of the same scene. So it's been enjoyable. I'm about halfway there, but a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, you write and you paint, so how do you budget your time to do all this stuff?
Lately, it's been mostly in the writing side.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like I've got some momentum there. I feel good about what I've produced and want to keep that going first and foremost. And the painting side has been a little bit of a filler, but I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get out and, for example, painted Dodge County. My mom and sister joined me in Mayville, Wisconsin, painted a scene for Dodge County, and continue to work on this county project. Way back when, I used to paint scenes of waterfowl, and I entered a couple of them in the duck stamp painting contest.
But
that was quite a while ago. So I've always been interested in it, but only in the past, let's call it 5 years, have I ramped it up.
Have you taken some training in painting?
No. Kind of a self-learned thing. I did take a class in Bloomington, Minnesota at their Center for the Arts in abstract painting, but that was the only one. It's the only class I've taken. My girlfriend and I go to a lot of art museums, and there's a lot you can learn, in my opinion, by carefully studying the work of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, probably more than anything else, is what I've done to try to advance my ability in the craft of painting, and I mostly use acrylics as the main medium.
Mm-hmm. Moving back to writing for a bit, I used to write for a living myself, and I just found, I'm just curious if you had any mentors or people whose writing you admired as you have progressed in your writing.
You mean authors that I enjoy reading or people I've actually met?
Either one. Yeah.
Okay. in terms of authors I enjoy reading, have you heard of Kent Harif? He writes about Eastern Colorado
fiction. Oh, guess not, no.
He's passed away. He wrote something called Plain Song that was an outstanding book.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy a lot of the classic authors. I enjoy Mark Twain. I enjoy Jack London immensely.
Mm-hmm.
Hemingway and the short stories by Ernest Hemingway I find great. I've read every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then T.C. Boyle's short stories I find excellent.
Well, those are you know, interesting ones to follow for sure. I like to read, I think I indicated I read a lot of thrillers, but as I was growing up on the farm, I used to read a lot of Mark Twain, because that's what my dad had in his collection of stuff. That's how I kind of got started reading, and I've been reading ever since.
Yeah, one of the things I like about Mark Twain is way back over a century ago when he was doing what he was doing, he was experimenting with things, and you may have noticed he speaks in the second person a little bit, talks to the reader
mm-hmm.
through the voice of, like, Huckleberry Finn. He's talking to the reader. I enjoy that. And readers of 11 Miles to Oshkosh will notice some of that in that book as well.
Well, we've been talking to Jim Gool, author of 11 Miles to Oshkosh. The book was released in October by the University of Wisconsin Press. Jim, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Jim.
Nice job, as usual, Mr. Oliver. Hey, while you're still here, what's happening at regional theater companies?
The University of Wisconsin Stout Theater will present an evening of one acts today, if you're listening on Thursday, through Saturday, and next Friday and Saturday in Harvey Hall Theater at the University. On Golden Pond, a production of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will be presented today, Thursday through Sunday, in the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Sister Act will be staged by the Phipps Center for the Arts Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays in the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show will run through November 25th. And the University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater will present A Year with Frog and Toad today, Thursday, through Saturday in the Davis Theater at the University. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Thank you, sir. Support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory. November features Mixed Media by Jan Killian, Acrylics and Watercolors by Cheryl Manwiller, and Bead Jewelry by Joanne Horisberger. More at artzgallery.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, offering 6 field trips this winter dedicated to bald and golden eagle viewing. Registration at nationaleaglecenter.org/eagle-viewing. That's a bit of a traditional tune from Shetland or the Shetland Islands, where fiddle player Kevin Henderson grew up. But let's start here. Mark Peterson is at it again, and thank our lucky stars he is. Or maybe I should say thank our luck stars, because that's where they are. Accomplished musicians who come across oceans to entertain and teach in Luck, Wisconsin. This particular incident is a return visit Saturday evening of the Nordic Fiddlers Block, 3 expert string players from Scandinavia. Anders Hall, the Swede, Olaf Luxengard, the Norwegian, and the aforementioned Kevin Henderson, the Shetlander. My very long-distance phone call went to Henderson, where I commented on what sounded to me like a Scottish accent, and he provided a bit of a geography lesson.
More akin to Scandinavia, because we used to belong to Norway at one point, and we've retained a lot of the culture and the dialect we speak in Shetland uses a lot of Norse words, because we spoke a language called Norn, which is more similar to Icelandic. We use a lot of old Norse words. We have a close connection to Scandinavia and Shetland, even though we belong to Scotland now.
I don't know. You sound a lot like William Wallace to me.
That's me. That's my sort of Scottish accent. I'm putting it on. That's my best English.
My heritage, the Ross clan.
Yeah.
I don't have a kilt, though.
Yes. No, me neither. Kilts is not so common in Shetland. We didn't speak Gaelic. We didn't have the pipes, for example, the piping tradition. So we don't have a lot of Scottish things in the Shetland culture.
You are a Shetlander, and it's more like coming from a small town than an actual country. There's only thousands of people there, not millions. What was it like growing up there? It had to be very personal.
It was a fantastic place to grow up. Because basically, when you were a kid, you could just be out all day in the nature. It was, like, open. There was no problem with, like, the parents letting kids out to just do their own thing. It's a very safe place. I have great memories of my childhood, just being out in nature, going to the beach, fishing, and just a lot of things.
I'll bet.
It's a fantastic place to grow up.
Do a lot of people, should I visit the Shetland Islands?
I thoroughly recommend it. Okay. Not that I'm biased or anything. But it's a very beautiful place, and a lot of amazing wildlife and a lot of music, big music culture in Shetland, so you get to hear a lot of different music. I really recommend it. A lot of people that go fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go now. Now you convinced me.
That's good.
So now, but people call it the Shetland Islands. Is there one big island that is called Shetland, or do we hop from island to island? What do we do?
Well, Shetland is actually a group of islands. There's over 100 islands, but there's only 15 that's inhabited. The other thing is you can never get further than 3-4 miles from the sea. So that gives you some idea of how big it is. It's not big.
No.
So yeah, there's a lot of inter-island ferries that goes to various islands. That's where people live. And they have been speaking about getting some fixed links to some of the islands, but it's a bit of a split in the community about that, because some of the rural areas doesn't want people moving because they think too many people will move there, for example.
I see.
But I personally think it would be a good thing to get some fixed links, like the Faroe Islands, for example. They have a lot of tunnels and bridges and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of the islands that's connected with the bridges in Shetland, but the rest is all small inter-island ferries.
If I close my eyes, I can imagine how a guy from Shetland might run into a guy from Sweden and another guy from Norway. But tell me about how the idea of your group, Nordic Fiddlers Block, began. And did you guys imagine that you might have something special together from the day you met?
Well, to start with, it was more just we met socially at various festivals, for example, in Norway. And, like, Anders and I sort of met and hung out and enjoyed gammon and partying a bit together, and it was just through that Anders kind of thought it might be cool to explore the links, musical links, and just have fun playing the three different fiddle styles, because they're three very distinct fiddle styles, Shetland, Sweden and Norway. And Anders plays in another band with Olaf anyway, called Sver. So he thought Olaf would be another good guy to get in on it, and we just decided to have a rehearsal weekend. 2009, I think it was, when we started May, and we had great fun that weekend playing and mixing the styles and arranging music, and we thought maybe we should try and arrange a tour and see how it goes, and it was a big success. We had a tour in Norway, and we just thought, we'll make it more permanent, and that's really how it came about. It more started as a fun thing, but then it kind of got more serious.
Yeah. Well, how much of what you do is original stuff? Or do you arrange established folk songs? And do you all write music? How does that all work?
Well, to start with, the main focus was the traditional music from where we all come from. Probably 80% of the music we played at the start was traditional, but we also played some of our own music and some tunes that composers that we know and like. We played some of their music. The main focus is traditional music and their own compositions.
Well, since, you know, there's so much disagreement in the world today, especially where I'm sitting in America, tell us a story about three guys who just get along famously, like in a fairy tale, like the three pigs. We'll make it the three fiddlers, and I'll start it out. I'll say, once upon a time, there were three. No, that's the way it goes. But you guys get along well.
We do, yeah. I think it's really important when you're in a band to get along socially. I think on one level, that's almost more important than how good the musicians are, because you spend so much time together in confined spaces, like a car or a train or a bus or a plane or whatever. When you're going on tour, you're going away for a couple of weeks, so you're spending a lot of time just with you. It's important that you get on well together socially.
Yeah. We're on the phone with Kevin Henderson, and he's speaking to us from his home in Norway. He's a native of Shetland. He is one of three members of the Nordic Fiddlers Block, along with Anders Hall and Olaf Luxengard. They're appearing Saturday, November 10th at the West Denmark Lutheran Church. That is just outside of Luck, Wisconsin, 7:30 p.m. Now that I brought up Luck, you've been there before. We need to bring up Mark Peterson, because I don't think there are many Mark Petersons out there in the world. He does a marvelous job of making sure that you guys have a regular gig in Wisconsin, and we have to thank him for allowing us to meet good guys like you.
Yeah, Mark is an amazing man, and he does so much amazing work for live music, and he's just a great guy, and I met him quite a number of years ago now when he put on a concert for Boys of the Loch when I was touring with Boys of the Loch there, and he's like a lovely man, and he's just, I don't know what else to say. He just does a really good, really amazing job for live music.
Yeah, he does. And thanks to Mark Peterson, the people of Western Wisconsin, and especially the aforementioned Luck, Wisconsin area, the people around there and this entire part of the state of Wisconsin have become fairly savvy about your kind of music. They've seen and their kids have studied in fiddle camps with some of the best guys like you. It has to feel like a very friendly crowd to you when you're there.
Yeah, it is. It's like the fiddle school is such an amazing few days. It's a bit of a cliche though. It's just like one big happy family, but it really is like that. A really enjoyable few days to be. I feel really privileged to be part of it, and everybody there is just great, really great, and we have a fantastic time at that fiddle, the West Denmark Fiddle School.
That's very cool. Now, you released a CD a couple of years ago, and earlier in our conversation today, you alluded to the fact that you are putting materials together for something new. How's that going? Is this something you have your minds and hearts set on, is putting something new out?
Yeah, we've been working on it for a little while. It's just hard getting time, set off time, because we're all really busy with various things, and Olaf and myself, we've got a young family as well, which takes a lot of time. So it's a bit of a process, but we're getting there. Just we try to grab a day or so here and there and a few hours when we're on the road just to sit down and try a few things. But we're hoping to release the album later next year. That's the plan.
I want to thank you for spending time with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and hopefully when that new CD comes out, you'll make sure that we get one of the first copies that is still warm. Kevin Henderson, we are looking forward to seeing you again on the 10th of November here in this part of the Midwest. Travel safely, and thanks again.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Kevin Henderson. We talked about hygge, we talked about beer, and is a real good example of how much fun these guys have playing. I invite you to listen to the following piece, written by Kevin. It's just a couple minutes long, and the ending is what I'd like to share with you. Here we go. The Nordic Fiddler's Block. I mean? That's the part I wanted you to hear. Having fun or what? Saturday night, West Denmark Lutheran Church, Luck, Wisconsin. It's also a fiddle workshop starting around noon Saturday in the parish hall. Young people and adults who love the fiddle should spend time with these guys. Email Mark Peterson. Here's the address, Peterson, P-E-D-E-R-S-E-N, at shabardon.net, or call 715-529-0830. Concert details online at westdenmark.net. All admission can be taken care of at the door. Hey, thanks, Rachel, for your promotion, Kate for technical assistance, Dean for administration. Coming up next week, a Christmas stroll, the music of Monroe Crossing, and more, always more, as you know, on Spectrum West. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thank you. See you next week.